Welcome back to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm your host, Amber Khan. On this installment of our God and Government series, we're exploring how a growing democracy in Myanmar has actually created new space and momentum for hardline Buddhist nationalists and religious extremism. But independent reporter and producer Axel Kronholm says that Myanmar's brand of nationalism is distinct from those trends in the U.S. or in Europe.
In Europe and the United States, these populist nationalist movements are often driven by political outsiders who are sort of challenging the political establishment. In the case of Myanmar, it is the political establishment that is driving this nationalism under the army and under Aung San Suu Kyi and her current government. Similarly, though, to Europe and the US, what we're seeing is the power of information and also the phenomena of fake news. Myanmar has a very young press, and government-owned media is still in a very powerful position and has an advantage over what you would call independent media. And they are very much pushing anti-Muslim propaganda aimed at the Rohingya. Also, social media is playing a very big role in spreading false news from both sides in the Rakhine conflict. And so I think that is something that we definitely recognize from our own political climate.
And Kronholm says, as misinformation has spread on platforms like Facebook, so too have general anti-Muslim sentiments, no longer just directed at the Rohingya.
The issue of the Rohingya has been so inflamed and so polarized that it's sort of spilling over onto other Muslims in Myanmar. And this is partly driven by the state propaganda that's being pushed through government-owned newspapers and media that sort of confirms the government narrative in Rakhine State, that the government is in a fight against extremist militant Islamists.
In recent years, several mosques around Myanmar have been attacked, and Buddhist nationalists have pressured authorities to close down Muslim religious schools, or madrasas, in Yangon, the country's largest city. Kronholm has been tracking how other non-Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar are faring amid this growing nationalism. And last year, he reported from the Takata township in Yangon.
The sun sets over the zinc roofs and rice paddies of Takata township. The warm evening air carries the smoke from wood-burning stoves and the smell of garbage that's been fermenting in the sun all day. Some 50 Muslim men kneel for evening prayer and then touch their foreheads to the ground. They're praying in the middle of a narrow road. That's because authorities have shuttered the religious school or madrasa where they used to pray. Human rights observers say police chained the door shut to appease a mob of Buddhist ultra-nationalists. Leading the prayer is 78-year-old U A Chaw. He once served in the Burmese military. When authorities closed the madrasa, he says, he thought it was some kind of mistake. He wrote letters to everyone he could think of, regional officials, the police, even the federal government. When I ask him what reply he got, he goes quiet and shakes his head. Not a single reply. The Muslim men are keen not to stir further animosity. Prayers are over in 15 minutes. And then they quickly roll up the tarpaulin they've all been sitting on, pick up their trash, and disperse. U Tin Shui is the headmaster at one of the shuttered madrasas in Takata. It's a small community, and the residents don't have a proper mosque, so the school used to double as a place for prayer. Authorities said the closure was just going to be temporary, and that the school lacked permission to hold prayers, which was technically true. But U Tin Shui rejects that argument.
Who gives us permission to pray? No one should give us permission. We live here, we are citizens, so we have the right to pray. It's prayer. It's not like drinking or smoking or using drugs.
Ethnic minority Rohingya. They're facing yet another crackdown by Myanmar's authorities.
The Myanmar military has persecuted the Muslim Rohingya minority in northern Rakhine State for years. But at the end of 2017, their so-called clearance operations reached a whole new level of brutality.
They raped women. Some women died after being tortured. They even killed a newborn baby.
But in other parts of the country, non-Rohingya Muslims have generally blended in. People have married across religions, and Myanmar Muslims even played prominent roles in the country's democracy movement.
The people of Myanmar have waited 25 years since the last free election in their country.
However, democracy has also brought some unintended consequences. It lifted censorship, which in turn opened up a space for populist and extremist movements to express themselves. This is Wirathu, Myanmar's most notorious monk. In a 2013 interview with The Guardian, he insisted that Buddhists were being raped, harassed, and bullied by Muslims in, quote, every town. I'm preaching this as a means of protecting our people, religion, culture, and country for national security, Wirathu told The Guardian. Today, his preachings and those of other extremist monks are widely shared on Facebook and other social media platforms, spreading his brand of religious intolerance. And this hate speech hasn't just paved the way for the military offensive against the Rohingya Muslims in Rakhine State. It is also affecting Muslims in other parts of the country.
I mean, on that night, it's kind of a conflict happened. It started with like around 10 or 11 p.m.
Naichi is also a Muslim. She lives in Mingalak Town Nyunt, a Yangon township that is almost entirely Muslim. She asked me not to use her real name as she speaks about a topic as sensitive as religious persecution. It's early evening when we meet. Vendors sell samosas and curries from street carts, and low-flung apartments are covered in blue and green moss. Naichi shows me around, and she tells me about a night in May when a Buddhist mob suddenly appeared and rampaged through her neighborhood. They beat up one of the residents.
They, like, beat one guy, and that guy was sent to the hospital. So, Muslim resident.
The mob claimed there was a Rohingya, or in their view, an illegal Bengali immigrant, hiding in the neighborhood. Naichi describes the feeling as very hostile.
Yeah, very hostile feeling at the time.
Police intervened and fired warning shots in the air, and they managed to disperse the crowd.
Okay, this is my street.
Oh, this is your street? Okay, nice.
We crossed the street onto a lush alley to Naichi's family home. Naichi's niece says a muted prayer while the rest of the family digs into lentil soup, fried noodles, and samosas. Naichi says mob attacks and shuttered madrasas are not even the worst of it. She worries that Myanmar's Buddhist nationalists are moving from the fringe to the mainstream.
And they already announced that they will form a political party. And
the Association to Protect Race and Religion, that's the nationalist movement behind much of the online hate speech, is looking to set up a political party.
So it is happening. And who knows, they might win.
They want to challenge the government in the next election, slated for 2020. Naichi fears they would enjoy widespread support, since monks hold a lot of sway in Myanmar. She says they're natural leaders.
One thing is, Myanmar is not a very educated country, so people get influenced very easily. So monks are like the standard leaders for the people. So when a monk says something, they usually follow. So there are many great monks, but that nationalist monk, they have a good influence on people. There's a big possibility that that nationalist party will win vote. So I really worry that.
Hello?
Hello?
Recently, I called Naichi to check in.
I'm good.
She said authorities had arrested a few suspects from the Buddhist mob that harassed her neighborhood.
But they didn't arrest the whole group, you know. They left out some monks.
But as for the religious schools in Takata, they remain closed.
I mean, there is no response from the government or anyone yet.
Authorities have also prohibited the residents from holding more street prayers.
Activists are now calling for Aung San Suu Kyi to be stripped of her Nobel Prize.
In the meantime, Aung San Suu Kyi has run into widespread criticism for failing to speak out against human rights abuses against Muslim minorities.
Aung is no Nelson Mandela. She's very much an insider, her father having founded modern Burma and belonged to its military elite.
The irony is that most of Myanmar's religious and ethnic minorities backed Aung San Suu Kyi in the 2015 election. For now, many of them are wondering where the country is heading and what their rights as a minority are really worth.
A year after Axel Cronholm's report, the madrasas remain closed and Muslims in Takata Township have nowhere else to pray but in their homes and at informal gatherings. He joins me now for an update, and he says the situation is not improving.
Some of the individuals that were part of arranging and organizing this street prayer that happened as a result of the closing of the madrasas, they've now been sentenced to jail for disrupting public order, as the authorities claim. Yeah, which, to me, as someone who was there actually witnessing the street prayer take place, sounds a bit ludicrous, because the whole prayer was over in 10 minutes. It was a quiet back alley street with not much traffic. So it's very obvious that this is motivated by something else and not a concern for public order. Myanmar has a tradition of really harsh and repressive punishments for these kinds of mild transgressions.
Cronholm describes the different ways this discrimination is playing out today.
There's also a recent case with a Muslim woman from Rakhine State named La Piu, and she was recently sentenced to 1 year of hard labor for attempting to travel to Yangon without a permission. So there's been several reports about discriminatory practices against Myanmar Muslims, Muslim citizens, such as refusal to issue national registration cards or ID cards to Muslim citizens. The authorities in many places are refusing to grant permission for rebuilding or renovating mosques. So there's a lot of discrimination of that kind taking place. There was an organization called the Burma Human Rights Network based in the UK that last year came out with a report that said that several villages across Myanmar have declared themselves no-go zones for Muslims, like erecting signboards warning Muslims not to enter. So I think that the trend is definitely worrying, and the government is not showing any signs of reversing that trend.
As a result, Cronholm says many Muslims are fearing there will be little protection for minorities in the future.
At least the Muslims in Yangon that I have spoken to, both young and old, are not in a state where they're fearing for their own survival or physical security, but rather they are concerned and worried about what is yet to come, and they're worrying about the next election, what might happen after that. Muslims in Myanmar have a long history. So going back to the 1700s, there were Muslims serving in the King's Royal Defense Army. They had mosques built for them. In the mid-1800s, King Mindon permitted to building a mosque inside the palace walls. And Muslims served in the first government of independent Burma in 1948. So they've had a very natural part in Myanmar societies since the founding of the country. And I think many of these Muslims today feel as if their citizenship and their rights are not as self-evident as those of the majority population. And that is obviously causing concern and causing worry.
The crackdown against religious freedom is also affecting other religious minorities, like Christians in Myanmar's Chin and Kachin states. Cronholm says he was embedded several months ago with the Kachin Independence Army, covering the civil war that's raged in that northern state since the 1960s. He says civilians remain under, quote, enormous pressure and suffering.
Minorities for a long time didn't have any right to learn their own language in schools. or practice their culture. Even to this day, it's very hard to have any education in minority languages. They have to take place outside of school hours and have very small budgets from the Ministry of Education. So this Burmanization process is taking place at the cost of all kinds of minorities in Myanmar.
Kronholm reports he has not seen the newly democratizing government take any steps to ensure religious freedom, despite outside pressure. Even democracy proponent Aung San Suu Kyi has remained notably silent on the conflict. University of Tennessee professor Harrison Aiken says there are a few reasons for that.
There are many former generals that were involved in her party. Aung San Suu Kyi herself is the daughter of the founding father of Burma, General Aung San, who was assassinated in the late 1940s. And so in many ways, they were pursuing democratization, but democratization that was not challenging that national idea of Myanmar being Burman and Buddhist. They were representing the center itself. So a lot of her responses are very much reflective of that idea, not challenging that national identity, but in essence, embracing it and combining that with democratic principles. Individually, she's in a very difficult situation. So prior to 2010, when she was under house arrest, she was very much seen as this moral voice, Nobel Peace Prize winner, in essence, the moral consciousness of the human rights movement in Myanmar opposed to the military junta in power. After she was released from house arrest in 2010, she ran for office. She won a seat in parliament, and then eventually her party won power in 2015. She's currently state counselor. But she, in essence, gave up that position of being a moral voice, of being the source of a moral consciousness, to be a political actor.
Kronholm says it may be up to the broader society in Myanmar to call on Suu Kyi's party and the government to protect religious minorities.
If this discrimination against Muslim citizens in Myanmar continues, we should see popular protests against that as well. And how these movements are met from the government, if they are met with dialogue and compromise or with violence, should give some indication on where the government is leaning on this. And then, of course, the upcoming election in 2020 will be a decisive moment for, you know, knowing where the people stand on this and what kind of political forces will have power in the future.
Axel Kronholm is an independent journalist based in Sweden. Next, we hear from a scholar who explains how the geopolitical context and the theology of Theravada Buddhism can inspire support for nationalism and violence against perceived outsiders. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices.